Would you like to play some football?
And welcome to Gridiron and the Gospel, a faith and college football podcast. I'm George Schroeder.
And I'm Brad Edwards. And man, we have reached a critical juncture of the college football season. Outside of one result, George, it was kind of a ho-hum college football Saturday. But, you know, there's some other interesting things going on, and that includes the first rankings coming out of this season by the selection committee on Tuesday night. So a lot for us to talk about, and we'll be talking about it with a guy that we've known for quite a while back in our years of covering college football.
Absolutely. Dennis Dodd from CBSSports.com, a very good friend of mine, and I'm grateful that you're now a friend of the pod, Dennis.
Yes, I love being friends of pods, but that's hey, I need all the friends I can get. Thanks for having me, guys.
Dennis is a we'll talk a little bit more about your background, your bio, and even where you've been yesterday. We record this, as always, on Sunday nights. But first, let me get to our presenting partner, Subsplash. Subsplash allows your church community to access messages, resources, and even give to your church from one place. It also equips church leaders to connect with their congregation in ways you never could have done before. Subsplash is so much more than just a church software. It brings people together. It empowers giving, fosters discipleship, and it transforms lives. And if you're interested in learning more, you should book a demo at subsplash.com/SBC. And if you use that link, you get a special discount for churches, but you do have to use that link to get the discount. Again, that's subsplash.com/SBC, subsplash.com/SBC. So Dennis Dodd, CBSSports.com, you and I used to ride the circuit together, so to speak, and I got bucked off the horse, and I'm grateful for where God has led me, but you're still out there every week. And we're going to get to where you were yesterday a little bit, but thank you for joining us, man. I really appreciate it. If listeners don't know who Dennis Dodd is, it's because they're not paying attention to college football. Because if you want to be on top of things, you pay attention to what he's writing and what he's doing on the various CBS platforms too. So thank you for joining us, man.
Hey, love it. Love to be with two veterans like yourselves and talk ball. It's I think Brad, you're right. It's been kind of an interesting season. If you start with realignment, you know, I've just been hoping to cover games and write and talk about football. That's been really, really hard this season.
Well, realignment, people doing in-person scouting, which we'll get to again. We've covered that about 3 weeks in a row on the pod, and it keeps following up. NIL portal, Lincoln Riley not having a defense, which goes back 7-8 years. It's not a USC development. We've seen this movie before, is what I keep telling people. So many things to talk about, but let's start with something very. You weren't in town; you were on the other side of the country, but close to home. You make your home in the Kansas City area, in Lawrence, Kansas. Those Kansas Jayhawks have become relevant under Lance Leopold, and amazing to see what they've done. But they hadn't beaten Oklahoma since I think 1996 or 1997. It was 18 straight times.
Yeah.
18 straight times. And they playing with Jason Bean, who it's easy to say he's a backup quarterback. He's still probably one of the top five quarterbacks in the Big 12, I would think. But playing with Jason Bean, they, you know, came back and beat Oklahoma, and a tremendous upset. I don't know if it's the upset of the season, but it is definitely a put shockwaves through the CFP, I would think, through the CFP race.
It's one of them because all the reasons you just mentioned, haven't been Oklahoma since 97, backup quarterback to the point that I don't think Jalen Daniels is coming back, guys. The preseason Big 12 Player of the Year, why would you burn that red shirt? I think he's played in four games, and you're going to be okay with Jason Bean. Five touchdown passes, all of 30 yards or more against Oklahoma State. Engineers this upset of Oklahoma, and it's great for Kansas. It's proof of concept once again that Lance Leopold will take his'n and beat your'n. I think that's been kind of the overriding theme of his whole career: Wisconsin, Whitewater, Buffalo, Kansas, and really puts the Big 12 in a bad place playoff wise. The first Power Five conference with no undefeated teams. They pretty much need Texas to win out to get in. I don't know if that'll happen. And that's a team that won't be in the league next year. So it's kind of tough, but a great, great story for Kansas. Tore down the goalpost. I actually stopped by and saw Lance Leopold last Monday. No notebook, just wanted to say hello. And he entertained me for about an hour. We just talked ball and talked about the game, and he was great. He's one of my I don't want to say friends because it's because of the nature of the job, but he's a great coach and a great person.
Yeah, for sure, no question. And doing a tremendous job at a place that had been kind of a graveyard for college football. They had a couple of years with Mark Mangino 15, 16 years ago, and other than that, but certainly over the last decade plus, I mean, Kansas was futility to you. They were about as bad as those old K-State teams from 35 years ago, pre-Bill Snyder.
Yeah, they were changing coach time after time. And you're right, Mark Mangino, 07, this is the best, or potentially the best they've been since 07, last time they beat a team ranked this high since winning the Orange Bowl that year.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. It's a great win for Kansas, and you talked about what it maybe does for the Big 12's playoff hopes. What is it? How does it change, or does it change what you thought about Oklahoma? Are you one of those guys that had them sort of in the playoff mix based on what you'd seen, or were you beginning to be a little concerned about them, or what?
They were in my top four because they had beaten the team that had beaten the team. If you consider Texas still owns one of the most significant wins of the season at Alabama. And Oklahoma beat Texas. They beat the team that beat Alabama. I think that said something for them. They were definitely improved defensively. Dylan Gabriel's having maybe the best season of his career. But there were issues yesterday where I think they ran the ball too much. They gave Kansas the ball, plenty of time left late, so they could score that winning touchdown with under a minute to go. And it reminded me of 2 years ago, different team, different circumstances maybe, but a freshman Caleb Williams against a 2-10 Kansas. That was kind of when you saw that, hey, maybe this Leopold guy's got it together. Now, Kansas lost the game late when Caleb Williams took the ball from his running back, who was about to be stopped in the backfield, and picked up a first down. But Kansas led that game 17-0. They led the Oklahoma game Saturday 14-0 after a rain delay finished off the deal. But there's look in the new Big 12. This is what, and I'll tell you what, this is what Lance Leopold and I talked about. Again, not for publication, but he understood what I was saying. Kansas has as good a chance as any in the new Big 12.
Yeah.
If they rise up and win the thing, they're going to be in a 12-team playoff. I mean, that's that. And I talked to, tooting my own horn, I talked to some of the architects of the playoff. We know who they are, Jack Swarbrick, Bob Bowlesby, Craig Thompson, Greg Sankey, who thought this thing up. And altruistically, this is what it was about. Yeah, the money's the money, but it was about access. And I'm kind of doing that story this week. Boy, if you think it's wild now, think about Air Force being in this thing.
Yeah.
Because as it stands right now, they would be.
Yeah, Dennis, and I, you know, another team that I think will, you know, I don't know if we'll get to in our conversation, but one that I think will, you know, be an interesting one to keep an eye on, and certainly for future seasons, is like James Madison. Like where would they be? And obviously there's a whole different scenario going on with them as it relates to the selection committee and what they'll do with them and all that. But just kind of going from the one game we just talked about that was it seemed like it was really the only consequential thing that happened as far as the national championship race on Saturday, to a game that you were in attendance, which involved the number one team, where people thought they might get a game, but really for the second time this season, and only the second time this season, they looked like Georgia has looked in the previous couple of years. What was your take on the Bulldogs watching them in person?
Yeah, I'll just tell you what I wrote, because it's kind of how, well, it's what I felt. I go, I'm not going to have some hot take from the press box. My hot lava takeaway is don't run sideways against Georgia's defense.
Yeah.
Because because Florida's trying to do that all day. And I don't know if you saw that fourth and one play where they snapped it between the quarterback's legs and some kind of trick play to a Wildcat running back, and he got sacked in the backfield. Look, if you're not good enough to pick up a yard against Georgia on fourth down, what business do you have, you know, trying to beat him? And they tried to trick it up. A lot of you know, check down passes, a lot of jet sweeps, a lot of runs to the outside. And that just tells me, well, we can't man up and beat him between the tackles. Not that you have to do that on every play, but you have to establish, you know, a turf presence. And they couldn't. I agree with you, Brad, not unexpected. But I think we're now seeing this late in the season, 9 weeks in, that Georgia has a chance to three-peat this thing.
Yeah, I think that's the question everybody has is, you know, when were they going to flip the switch and did we just see it? And so we'll take it from there. Looking at their upcoming schedule, their next three games are all against teams that are currently ranked in the top 20. Take the rankings for what they're worth. But you've got, you know, Missouri and Ole Miss, followed by a road game at Tennessee. And what are your thoughts on Georgia? Are they vulnerable? And I know they probably have a mulligan, so it maybe not even, you know, wouldn't even matter if they were to lose one of those games, but what are your thoughts on the likelihood of that happening?
Yeah, as long as they make the championship game, I guess, undefeated, I think they do have a mulligan. They couldn't lose a championship game and have two losses, but you're right. It's happened multiple times now in the BCS and playoff era, but before the season, the schedule was so soft, and we thought Georgia was so powerful that they were going to be tested maybe twice, at Auburn at the end of September, and then what you just mentioned, November 18th at Tennessee in a revenge game. Georgia kind of took them apart last year, not unexpected, but if you remember back then, Tennessee was had dreams of the playoff of unseating Georgia. So, yeah, I think that looks a little more, I don't know, challenging maybe than it did before. The Missouri thing, I think it's going to be interesting. But in my heart of hearts, I think they're just going to slap down the Tigers. They're very good. And I think, look, Eli Drinkwitz is going to win some sort of, I don't know, turnaround coach of the year if he keeps up like this. Because if they end up 10-2 in the SEC, that's maybe New Year's Six territory.
Yeah, absolutely.
So he's got a fine team. I don't know if they match up really well. I know Georgia recruited Brady Cook at one time, and I think that's one of the great stories, at least in Missouri. Brady Cook was just the guy, and their new offensive coordinator, Kellen Moore's brother, has done a fantastic job with him, as is Eli Drinkwitz, who's, you know, was hired because he is an offensive mind. They got this Cody Schrader, who was a walk-on or D2 guy. Talk about running between the tackles. They will try to run between the tackles with Cody Schrader straight ahead, for better or worse, against Georgia. So, you know, I want to get fired up about it, and I'm going there this week to chronicle, you know, his Missouri for real story. But, you know, having seen Georgia, I think they got it wrapped.
You know, for what it's worth, I mean, off the top of my head, I don't think anyone gave Georgia a better game last year outside of Ohio State.
Yeah, I looked
it up. What Missouri did in Columbia. Now, granted, there's a difference between Columbia and Athens, which is
they
a big part of this.
One in the fourth quarter, and it just got away from him. Yeah, I looked it up today because this is 25 in a row, and only one other team in the SEC's history has won 25 in a row, and that was Alabama. I think they've actually done it a few times. But Georgia is now four wins away from the all-time winning streak in the SEC. But I looked it up and I said, okay, I knew that was a close game. Did anybody else play him close? And the answer is really no, unless you count, you know, South Carolina this year. But yeah, 26-22, Missouri was ahead in the fourth quarter and Stetson Bennett let him down. But I don't know if that carries over. I think that was just a hiccup. You know, it was just a sleepy Saturday night in the middle of the season. Georgia knew they were going to win probably no matter what. But Missouri, I'll tell you what, Missouri is much improved. When they went to Kentucky and fell behind, and Kentucky's not great, but fell behind, I think 14-0, blocked the punt and scored the next 35 points to win on the road in the SEC. That was significant to me.
Well, let me just take us across the country, because I think we could talk about UGA all we want, and I don't see them getting challenged until the playoff, quite frankly, probably. because I think the SEC is not as good as it has been in most years. But that said, you know, I could be wrong. And I do think Georgia has every chance to win the whole thing. I think they might be that three-peat team we haven't seen in however many years, 60, 70 years, Dennis, you would know. But
I want to go in that poll era. You know, since
not ever. No, right. That's right. But, I mean, I guess if you go way back when it was everybody and his brother just chose national champions. Oregon drills Utah. What if I told you that, yes, I know what happened in Seattle, but even with that game, I came away thinking Oregon might be better than Washington in Seattle, and just it didn't go their way, and they probably have a couple of fourth down decisions they might like to have back and that kind of thing. But Oregon goes to Salt Lake City and drills what I think is a really good Utah team, a Utah team that manhandled Florida, by the way, earlier in the year. What do you make of Oregon and getting beyond the Pac-12? If Oregon could somehow find its way into the playoff, is that finally the Oregon team that maybe could contend for the whole thing?
I think they could contend for it. I think what they did on Saturday at Utah, that's the result I didn't expect. I saw Oregon win, you know, a path to winning, but not like that. In other words, they flipped the tables on Utah. That's what Utah does to people. They smack them in the mouth. They wear them down. They're not flashy. And in many ways, this Oregon team isn't. You know, Bo Nix is very good, maybe the best quarterback in the country when it's all said and done. But they're very, very good on defense. They're very physical. And that's what they did to Utah. And I thought that was the most surprising thing. If you're sitting there right now, this is going to be fascinating Tuesday. I think we all agree, based on their season, they lost by 3 points at Washington because their coach gambled. They played Washington even, if not outplayed them that day. Do you put Oregon in the top four, or do you just this week, or you just say, well, Washington's undefeated, and they beat him head to head? You know, I don't think so, but they're playing like a top four team right now, and they do have the team to do it. Bucky Irving, I mentioned Bo Nix. They're very, very good on defense, and it's taking on the personality of Dan Lanning, those great defenses at Georgia. You know, he's not backing down from the fourth down stuff. Again, it lost him the game at Washington, but he's going to keep doing it. And to his credit, that team turned right around, didn't blink, and got to the point where they ended Utah's 18-game home winning streak and beat him by more than four touchdowns. That was an impressive result at the top, as I've seen this year.
Yeah, so let's use this as a jumping off point then to get into the selection committee and what we think that they're going to do on Tuesday evening. So let's start there. Head-to-head, it's something that they talk a lot about. I'm not saying that they have never violated it, but it's pretty sacred with them. And so do you believe when we see those results, first of all, that Oregon will be ranked behind Washington because of head-to-head?
I do. I think 9 weeks in, head-to-head will matter. Now, look, Brad, we know they can do anything they want on Selection Sunday. Yeah, that's why I think this Tuesday night thing is just – I think it's hyped. It's a sham. It's programming. Hey, I get
– You're speaking my language.
Spot, I'm on every Tuesday night talking about it. It's great. But – you know, I go back to 2014 where TCU was third and won by 49 points and was sixth.
Fell to sixth, yeah.
Well, fell to sixth. So, you know, what are we talking about? But yes, I do. I'm just making the case that, boy, is anybody playing better than these guys, or few teams are playing better than these guys right now. And I think Washington will be left out of the top four as well.
We'll get there. One other thing I want to hit, though, as far as that goes. And of course, this whole conversation about Oregon and Washington, whatever, it's going to be decided ultimately on the field, because there will be a Pac-12 championship game. And by the time the only rankings that matter come around, one of them will be the Pac-12 champion and the other one won't be. And it's still possible that the Pac-12 champion could be neither one of them. Right. As we sit here today, but USC's, I don't think
USC still.
Yeah, USC still in it and has plays both of them the next two games. So head to head again. Do you assume Oklahoma is ahead of Texas, who is ahead of Alabama?
I think I saw the AP poll. I think Texas is ahead of Oklahoma. I had Texas ahead of Oklahoma. I have to do a top 25 every week because that loss to Kansas was so significant and Texas is playing well. And I don't necessarily agree with the transitive properties of poll rankings where, hey, I beat you head to head. And if we have the same record, I'm better than, you know, I'm ranked ahead of you in the polls. I think it is eye tested right now. They've got some problems on defense, Oklahoma, and Texas just won with their backup quarterback. How about that? And handled BYU, not a great BYU team, but handled them as they were expected to do. So I do have Texas ahead of Oklahoma. The question, and I do think the committee will have them ahead,
based okay,
because of what I just said, and I won't be surprised.
Yeah, I think that's right too. I think the committee will have them ahead of them too, because I think there's a little bit of what have you done for me lately, even with this committee. And then also, I do think, look, a close loss to Oklahoma is better than a close loss at Kansas. That's just true. Yeah. Kansas is much, 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 much better than they've been. I don't think we probably give them enough credit for how dangerous they are. They can beat almost anybody in the conference, but Texas handled them and handled them pretty easily. In Oklahoma, let's not forget, I think this calls into, we could have like dismissed last week in the 31-29 or whatever the score was. I can't remember the score, but it was a 2-point win. And I was at the game and I've forgotten the score over UCF. But you've now got two snapshots. So you're building a case post win over Texas. You're seeing Oklahoma sort of regressing a little bit from what they looked like earlier in the year. That doesn't have to remain that way, but that's the way it is right now. And that's why I think it'll be Tuesday night. I could see if Oklahoma starts playing like gangbusters again, that 2 or 3 weeks from now, maybe they start talking about, well, Oklahoma's righted the ship. They're playing really well, and they do have that head-to-head over Texas, and then it would matter. Right now, I'd rank Texas ahead of Oklahoma.
Yeah. Yeah. And hey, once again, this is one that's going to be decided on the field in the first weekend of December. So.
Well, let's talk about that for 10 seconds. Five-way tie in the Big 12. I looked it up today. Every one of those five plays another team that is tied with. They all play one in their remaining games. No one has more than one team that they're tied with. Oklahoma State, we got Bedlam. They're in this thing. All at, what was it, 4-1. They're all at 4-1. So, but again, you're right, Brad. For playoff purposes, if it gets that far, it'll be decided on the field.
So let's, and by the way, one, we'll find out a whole lot more about Oklahoma this week. Not Absolutely. That we want to be too Oklahoma centric on this podcast, but they're going to Stillwater for Bedlam, the final Bedlam, at least as it's going to be regularly scheduled. I think they'll get back together at some point, but the final Bedlam, and you'd have the Cowboys revved up for that in the just on general principle. And now the Cowboys are playing, suddenly they're a different team they were earlier in the year. So, you know, we'll know a whole lot more about Oklahoma real quick here and Oklahoma State. And as you said, on down the stretch, I think the Big 12 though is in real danger, regardless of whether Texas or Oklahoma, that it would have to be one of those two teams finishes out 12-1. I think even the 12-1 champ, even Texas with the win over Alabama, has a real shot of getting left out of the playoff based on some of the based on the lack of resume. Their only resume would be beating Oklahoma once, which might have 2 or 3 losses at that point, and beating Alabama, which would be a good win. But I mean, I think if we get to when we get to talking about the CFP, the Big 12 champ might get left out of this thing. And I don't mean for a second team from another league. I mean for another champion.
No, I agree. That I think that was one of the takeaways from the weekend that. It said how good Georgia is. Looks like they have a chance to win out. Looks like the Big Ten's going to have a team in, you know, and maybe Michigan, maybe Ohio State. We don't know. Florida State has the road in front of them clear for an ACC championship to get in. So, you know, and we just talked about Oregon. The best of Oregon and Washington look like they might have a chance. And so we got that far. We're not talking about the Big 12 champion. And I think that bodes, I don't know if the word is, unfortunate for the Big 12 going forward, but they will have the access to the 12-team playoff. That's why I said in the beginning, I think Kansas is going to be really interesting to watch in the future. Little old Kansas might have a chance to get in. But I agree. I think that was a damaging loss. the Oklahoma loss for the Big 12's chances. And I just mentioned five-way tie for first at this point. Iowa State is tied at four.
Yeah, still in it.
One of those teams get hot and makes it official and knocks them out.
All right. Well, we've talked around it. We kind of talked about the back end of the top 10 indirectly, but let's get to the top four or five here. What are you expecting the committee to do, first of all? And then second, what would you do differently than what you expect the committee to do?
I think the committee will have Georgia first because of the reason we discussed. I really do. I think, and this is something we haven't raised, and I've been already told that they will have to talk about it in the room. Integrity of the game with Michigan. That will be a talking point. And I'm not saying they're going to drop them or leave them out, but I think it will be very easy right now to make them third. And maybe have
talking about Michigan. Ohio, yeah. Yeah.
Michigan. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Have That's Ohio okay. State second and Florida State, fourth. So what I think they'll do is have, I do think they'll have Georgia first, and they'll have Michigan second because there is that taint there. They won't say it, but when they go around and vote, I think that's where they're going to land. And then Ohio State third, and then Florida State fourth. I think that's pretty easy right now, given Washington playing close the last few games.
What do you think, Brad?
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I have a little bit different take on it. Now, look, what I think is going to be fascinating about this is that you kind of have dueling criteria, right, with the committee, and there are different things that we know that they look at that are kind of opposed to each other here. I mean, one of them is the eye test, and I agree with you. If you're going off the eye test, certainly Georgia should have as much consideration as anybody for number one, even if you're just ignoring, you know, the last 2 years. Michigan is definitely up there if you're going off the eye test. They haven't played anyone, but they've dominated the way that a really good team, a top two caliber team, should. But then you've got the other thing, which is strength of schedule. And neither one of those teams has what you would call a quality win at this point. Meanwhile, you've got, you know, teams like Ohio State and Florida State that do have some good wins to their credit.
And Washington, as long as we're
in Washington. Oh, I mean, and Washington has as good. I mean, you were talking about Oregon earlier. I mean, Washington has a great win. Even though it was at home, it was still a much better win than anything Michigan or Georgia can throw out there. And so I think it's fascinating. I'm actually expecting to put Ohio State number one.
Yep, that's what
because of the schedule strength. Really?
Wow.
But I mean, because they've beaten both Penn State and Notre Dame. I look at that, and I'm not even sure Michigan, and I'm not even saying this because of the, you know, the sign stealing stuff or any of that other, you know, thing that we'll get into that. But I just think based on the resume, based on the strength of schedule, that they'll go with maybe even Florida State 2 and Georgia 3, but at least either or right there at 2-3. And then maybe off the quality of that one win, Washington at 4, and then have Michigan at 5. And I, you know, if they did that, there would be people all over the place saying, you know, you're considering something that shouldn't be considered. I think you can legitimize Michigan at 5 without even having to go there.
Yeah.
Let's just say one thing, by the way. If that were to happen, it's exactly why they have the rankings right now on Halloween night. They're starting on Halloween night this year, but end of October, 1st of November, and they have four or five fake rankings, depending on how the calendar falls, for TV, just to drive the conversation. And we all know that. And, of course, Brad, you used to be at ESPN. I know you know that. And it's why when I was at USA Today, I used to rail every year about how dumb this is, understanding full well why they do it. But my whole point was this. They talk about bringing a clean sheet every week. And it really doesn't matter if they do that, except for the last week, which is the only week that matters. The problem is they could get locked into poll mentality where you move people up and down too. It's hard to bring a clean sheet. So they are creating potential issues for the 13 selectors by doing this every week. where instead of just waiting to the end of the season and looking at the whole body of work, and you can bring in game control and all those other phrases we've learned through the years at that point, head-to-head and conference championships and whatever else you want to, you know, however else you want to do it. But I don't know. I'm about to go – I'm ranting already, so I'll stop.
All right, George, give us your top four. Who are your top four if you were submitting a ballot?
Should be – okay, so go ahead.
I did, so –
Yeah, go ahead. You know, I'm asking George. Yeah.
Well, George. Dennis.
Yeah. Dennis is on the record. I'm on the record. I want to make sure George doesn't skip out and
I see what you
get off the hook here. Yeah. Listen,
I'm not saying, all right, so if I was the, all right, as you guys know, there's a retired media member on the panel, right? All the time. It's now that you and I, Brad, have unretired, we can't be on the panel, and not that either one of us is going to get asked anyway. Dennis is still working, but one day Dennis will be on the panel. So if one of us were on the panel, if we were that 13th vote, we like to think of it as the first vote, but however you want to do it, my vote would be Ohio State, Florida State, Michigan, Georgia.
Michigan
ahead of Georgia.
Ohio State. Florida State. I could be talked into Georgia, Michigan. I think Michigan has looked better all year long against nobody, but I don't think Georgia's played anybody yet either.
I had Michigan number one last week because at some point your schedule is your schedule, but at some point the cumulative body of work has to matter. And it did. And it's an indictment of the Big Ten. But they're doing exactly what 5.9 points per game. My biggest point was they don't even need Blake Corum. Blake Corum almost won the Heisman last year and rushed for 1,400 yards. I think he's got like 800 now. They could play without him and beat. That's how powerful it is. Clearly the best team Jim Harbaugh has ever had. Not supposed to matter in this. It's just, you know, game by game, year by year. But I think if you look at them, the most powerful team. Ohio State, I didn't take away much from Ohio State, Penn State. I thought Penn State was timid. They didn't go down the field. And if Ohio State didn't have Marvin Harrison Jr., they might have lost the game. They're not fortunate. It's great that they have him, and those other receivers will come back. But they were bailed out by Marvin Harrison Jr. I don't know how good McCord is. The defense looks pretty good. They got the running backs back, but I can't with them based on the last two games.
That's fair, except they just played two better teams than any of these other contenders have played. I'm with you, and that's why they do these rankings now, right? My head's going to explode, and yours will too, and we're on the same wavelength on this. But look, I think Ohio State's got a really good defense. I think they have that. I do wonder if you put my four together in a playoff, how they would fare because of the ineptitude, really. I mean, it's just a meh offense with Marvin Harrison, who's so good. Whereas some of these other offenses, I trust a whole lot more. These not even just the other three teams that I listed. I mean, two or three others as we move down the rankings, probably, that may or may not. And look, none of this. Again, Ohio State, Michigan are going to play. We're going to take care of that here in four weeks. Sorry.
Yeah. No.
You're betting.
Who you got? Who you got, Brad?
So I'm just first of all, if I'm ranking, I'm a believer in the eye test. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm also not a believer in Michigan, even though they have passed the eye test. And I know you're not supposed to go off previous seasons and all that, but I got to see Michigan beat someone other than Ohio State before I'm buying in that they're the best team in the country. Yeah, I'm willing to put them at two.
Weeks, at least.
Yeah. I'm willing to put them at two based on what they've done so far this season. It's practically flawless, right? So I would have Georgia number one. I would have Michigan two. And then I would go with probably Ohio State three. And then – you know what? As shaky as Washington has looked the last 2 weeks, Florida State's had a couple close calls too.
That's a good point.
Yeah, and so I would probably go with Washington just because I think beating Oregon's better win than beating LSU. And That's the way I would go. But I think it's fascinating because as we said, there's the possibility that the two-time defending national champion that is still undefeated could be ranked outside of the top two. There's a chance that the team that has been the most dominant of anybody this season could be outside of the top two. And if both of those things happen, then, I mean, this would be a great week to be on sports radio. That's all I got to say. Have a call-in show, right?
One thing to say, and then one question we need to ask before we get out of here. All right, one thing to say is this. If Georgia is not in the initial top four, the phone lines into Charlotte and Paul Feinbaum's show will melt on Wednesday and Thursday and Friday.
Well, they will. They will anyway. So.
Yeah, this is true. But yeah. I'm just saying. And also, there might be SEC fans who are marching on the Gaylord Texan. That's all I'm going to say. Which, for those of you who don't know, the Gaylord Texan in Grapevine, Texas, near DFW, is where the CFP selection committee meets, and they do have tremendous security. For those of you who might be thinking that way, so, and I'm kidding. Who's number five and who's number six in your initial top 25, or who should it be? I wanted to ask both of you guys that, and then we'll get out of here.
Well, I'll go real quick. I already said it. Washington five, Oregon six.
You did. That's right.
Think about that. Think about that, though. We just talked about how well Oregon is playing. I don't see a way they can be in the top five on Tuesday.
No. Well, they lost the game. Yeah.
And it was just one clock mismanagement issue is all it is. But
here's the thing, Duck fans. You can't worry about that. First of all, as I said many times, it doesn't matter. Secondly, you have to keep winning. And if you keep winning, you're going to probably, it'll be Washington or somebody in Vegas on December 1st, and you can win your way into the playoff. So quit worrying about it. But no, I agree. You cannot have Washington at five in the top five. I mean, Oregon in the top five. Who do you got, Brad?
Yeah, and so as I said earlier, I would probably go with Washington at four and then Florida State at five, and then I'd have Oregon at six. So we're close as far as that goes. And, I guess, Dennis, from there, I guess let's finish up by just going back to Michigan and the controversy that's just swirling really all over the sport right now because of what we've learned that Michigan has been doing. First of all, do you think that there's any chance that the committee would acknowledge that it was a consideration at all? Because it appears to have been something that has extended into this season, right? Or do you think it's simply innocent until proven guilty as far as that goes?
We don't know that it has stopped. We know that Connor Stallion's social media has been wiped. I assume he's talked to the NCAA, but I think how they'll address it. And who is the chair this year? I'm trying to remember.
I'm trying to remember too.
But anyway, he will.
If I was still at ESPN, I would know that off the top of my head, but I have no reason to know it right now.
He or she will say it was discussed. I talked to a former selection committee member Saturday, and that person told me, he said, they absolutely have to talk about it because it's an integrity of the game thing. It does impact the results on the field, and it's kind of like the Astros sign stealing, and it's not unlike that. Maybe the Astros were more overt. Maybe this thing seems to be elaborate. They absolutely have to talk about it, and they have to talk about it not only in the room. I think they have to talk about it with law enforcement in the NCAA and the Big Ten, because if I'm Tony Petitti, there's a lot of pressure on Tony Petitti to do something. We know, at least from published reports, looks like every school in the league got spied on. If I'm those ADs and coaches, I'm mad.
Yeah, I think they're really mad, Dennis. But here's my question. What can you do before it's proven, air quotes, and I just, I keep making all these gestures that you listeners can't see. But I don't think you can do anything before it's proven. And I know what you may say is, oh yes, you can. You're also asking the conference to root against its best interests, because either Michigan or Ohio State, or maybe both, are playoff participant types that could win the national title. So you're asking them to root against the conference's best interests too.
Traditionally, the Big Ten and conferences have taken a hands-off approach to stuff like this. Look at maybe the worst scandal ever, the Penn State thing. the Big Ten piled on after the fact. We can talk about how wrong that was, and it was a criminal thing outside the scope of the NCAA, but they did their own penalties after it was over. They weren't going to do anything in the middle of it. So I think it's another discussion, Brad, with Tony. You know, they hire these TV types, Tony Petitti. I'm sure when Tony Petitti was interviewing, one of the search committees said, what if there's a hazing scandal at one of our schools? What if there's a massive cheating scandal at one of our schools? Tony Petitti wasn't brought up to deal with this stuff. He just wasn't. He's a TV guy. Brett Yormark's a TV guy. So I think he has to address it in some kind of way pretty soon.
Yeah. It'll be fun to see. And I know that I don't know if we'll all be tuned into the broadcast, but we will certainly be very well aware of the rankings very soon after they come out if we aren't watching them live. And that's just what we do, even though we know it means nothing and whatever. So they've got us hooked as well. But Dennis, thank you so much for joining us. It's just fun to talk to you again. It's been a while since I've seen you. I don't know how recently George has seen you, but I really appreciate you being with us.
It's a pleasure to have two old guys from the road in the game with intelligent conversation about the game. Thanks so much.
Man, I appreciate you, Dennis. Dennis Dodd, CBSSports.com. Check out his work on all their different platforms. I favor the written word, but he's tremendous on their video as well. So, Dennis, we appreciate you, man. Have a great week, and hopefully we'll catch you down the road on another podcast sometime.
All right. God bless. Thanks, guys.
All right, we got to wrap the first half up, and when we come back, we'll talk a little bit of faith. But we'll be right back right after this.
Welcome back into Gridiron and the Gospel, which is brought to you by Subsplash, the leading engagement platform for your ministry. You can book a demo at subsplash.com/SBC. When you use that link, you'll get a special discount for churches, but you have to use that link for the discount. Again, that's subsplash.com/SBC. Subsplash.com/SBC. And now, it is time for the second half, George.
It absolutely is. And listen, as much as we appreciate Dennis Dodd coming on, as much as we love talking about college football, and we do, and I am super appreciative of Dennis, a good friend and a great college football journalist for years and years and years, this is the part of this podcast that gets you and me both excited. I'll speak for you because you're going to speak here in a minute. And we always start it out. We talk about faith. We talk about our faith in Christ. And we're glad that you stuck around with us for the second half of the podcast. And we always start it out with a segment called On My Heart, in which we talk a little bit about what's on our hearts this week that we're being taught about God. And it On My Heart segment is presented by Legacy Way. And we really appreciate Legacy Way. Legacy Way, giving glory to God by sharing His love through generosity. You can find out more about that at legacyway.org. And Brad, I know you have something on your heart.
Yeah, George. In the high school group at my church that I help out with, we're in the middle of a series where we're just discussing our church's affirmations of faith and basically just going through kind of the different things that are mentioned as part of that and helping the high schoolers understand what these various things mean and basically how they can use those in the near future when they go to college, after college, when they're out on their own. Whenever it comes time to choosing their own church, right? Like whenever they leave the church that they've grown up in or are currently in and have to choose a church for themselves, what do you look for? You know, that type of thing. And so as part of the conversation, the previous Sunday about, basically, what is the church all about? Like, where do we get all of our guidelines or our guidance for what a church is supposed to be? What is it supposed to look like? And one of the things that we were looking at as part of that discussion was at the end of Acts 2, where it talks about, the believers and the fellowship, you know, right after Pentecost. And it talks about how, you know, they had things in common, and it even mentions, you know, they sold their possessions and distributed everything so that anyone who was in need, you know, had their needs covered. And it talked about breaking bread in their homes and all these things. And we were saying, okay, this is what we're supposed to do for each other. Now, obviously, it doesn't mean that every church is supposed to, you know, everybody's supposed to go out and sell all their possessions and make sure that we divide everything equally. But in that particular case, that's what they did. But the key is that they helped each other. They made sure that all of their fellow believers around them had their needs taken care of. And that's one of the things that a church should do. And, you know, it's so easy for us to overlook that sometimes, you know, and it is fantastic that our churches, most of them, focus on missions, you know, and there's so many things that we go to great lengths to do for people, sometimes for people, you know, in and around our community, and many other times people who live a long way away, you know, obviously even internationally. And yet it can be easy to overlook fellow believers and their needs in the interest of spreading the gospel. And they're obviously both are important, okay? But it's what's been on my heart is just not forgetting about fellow believers. And the reason it's been on my heart is because I have a friend who is actually a friend of mine going back, I was going to say back to high school, but it's really back to childhood, who I have not seen in person in a long time. But he keeps up with me and he calls periodically and, you know, just always check to see how I'm doing. And most of the time it's just, you know, kind of, everything's going okay, whatever. But I'm always honest with, you know, what's going on in my life. And he recently, you know, reached out to me and I had expressed a need that I had, and I'm not going to get into it. I want to get all personal on that level. But he went, he did something I was completely blown away by, which is reaching out and providing something for me in order to help meet this need that I have at this moment. And I mean, being touched by it is just not even a strong enough way to describe it. And it just really struck me when we were having this conversation a week ago is that this is what it's talking about. I mean, he might not be in my physical church or even in the same state, but as far as fellow believers taking care of each other, I mean, that's what he exemplified right there. And it was just so meaningful to me. And then, you know, this week I was reading through the book of John, and I think I told you like 2 weeks ago, you know, that I was doing that. And, you know, I got to the point where, you know, that Jesus was talking about loving one another. And this is something that we, you know, we're all familiar with this and we know the importance of it. And Jesus says, at the end of this conversation, he says, by this, all people will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another. And it really is just as simple as that. And by the way, that is John chapter 13, verse 35. So John 13, 35, for those who want to go see the context for it. But all people will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another. And I just think, once again, that's so important for all of us to focus on. And, you know, what are we doing for one another? And not that we do it instead of reaching out to those who need to hear the gospel, but it's just not to forget about one another as we focus on spreading the gospel and just making sure that we're looking out for taking care of each other, as my friend did for me. And I want to just be sure that I am more aware of the needs of the people around me and asking the right questions and just knowing when and where there are opportunities that I can help and I can do things for others when I have that chance.
Man, I love that. And it's right. And that's what I mean, first of all, we love one another. Yes, you mentioned it. It's not that we don't love and care for and provide and you know, give to people in need who are not Christ followers, who are not maybe part of your church or whatever. But it's to say that, first of all, love one another. And it takes me to sort of where we, you know, as guys who follow college football, we also follow social media and things like that. And if you follow social media and you follow sort of, you know, various evangelical sort of echo chambers and social media, with me, sometimes it's the SBC, the Southern Baptist Convention, but it can be all sorts of things. You don't see a lot of loving one another on social media in the Christian realm. And, you know, sometimes when I see some back and forth or some bickering or some guys taking shots at people, I'm like, my goodness, that's really, maybe that didn't come across how you want it, but it's doesn't seem Christ-like. I think to myself, what's that look like to the guy who isn't a Christian, who isn't a Christ follower? And by this, people are going to know that you're mine if you have love for one another, right? What does that look like? So I love the fact that, you know, you've been loved here recently, shown love by a longtime friend and Christ follower. And I love where you were in Acts 2 as well, because Acts 2, 42 through 47, from verse 42 through the end of the chapter, basically describe, and I know that your friend is not in your church, but he's in the universal church. He's a Christ follower. Yeah. But it basically describes in those few verses sort of what the early church was like, the earliest early church. And it's what we are supposed to be like together as believers. And you could, you know, John 13, 35 is great. That's part of this. This is them in Acts 2, is them living that out. They're loving one another.
Yep.
And people, and if you go to the very end, it's pretty clear people saw, oh my goodness, these are Christ's disciples. These are followers of Christ. I can see that. And by the way, I want that. Because at the end it says, they ate their food with joyful and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. And every day the Lord added to their number those who were being saved. By this will people know that you're my disciples. By this will people, you know, when we love one another, when they see that we love one another, and then obviously we love them too, that's when they see something different.
Yeah.
That's when they see something that they're missing. That's when they see something that that they want. And I think, you know, the Holy Spirit opens hearts, but the Holy Spirit uses our modeling Christ-likeness together and then to the world too, outwardly, to show that difference, to show what those guys need. And so, listen, I like to sit in Acts 2, 42 through 47, because, you know, one of the things I get to do here is to oversee, shepherd, participate in, serve alongside our home groups at this church here, Storyline Church in Arvada, Colorado. And there's no place that you see something closer to Acts 2, 42 through 47 than in home groups, when home groups are being home groups the way they should be. They break bread together. They care for, they may not be like selling all their possessions and property and distributing the proceeds to all, but they're caring for each other in their home group to start with. And I could tell you story after story, even in my brief time here, about how home groups care. They serve as sort of the first tier in tremendous care when somebody has need who's a part of that home group. They break bread together. They devote themselves to the teachings together that they're hearing on Sunday and other places. And they fellowship together. And then they're also reaching outward into the community and engaging the city. And that's what home groups do, or small groups, or life groups, or city groups, or whatever your church calls them. That's what they do well. Anyway, I don't know where I was going with that. I've kind of started to hopping down a rabbit trail, so I apologize.
No.
But I love that passage, and I pray that our church and your church and our listeners' churches can emulate that earliest of early churches in how we love one another and show love for one another, and that God would add to your number in your church, people who are being saved because of it.
Yeah, Certainly, George. And one of the things that I thought of as you were saying that is, and I know that there have to be a lot of people listening who can identify with what I'm about to say, but, you know, churches all over the country, probably all over the world, have seen numbers go down since COVID, right?
Right.
And people slowly started to trickle back in, but I know there were people whose routine changed during COVID. And maybe they started, you know, watching their Sunday services online, and it just kind of became the norm for them. So they haven't quite gone back. And it just, this is an example of one of the reasons why community and fellowship is so important for believers. You know, and I would just encourage anyone who's listening who may have gotten into that routine. And while it's great that you're still getting the word, right? Like if you're doing those things at home, and you know, you are still in the Bible, you're still in prayer, you know, you're still connected with the church to a certain extent, there is still another level. And don't forget what that was like before COVID, if you haven't experienced it since, and all of the things that can be gained both by you and from you to others, if you get back in there and get involved, because we all need that. We all need to receive it, and we all need to give it, you know, the benefits of being in a community of believers.
Well, no, that's exactly right. And I, you know, whatever your reasons were or are for, and we're assuming we're talking about people who are still watching online. I think there are some folks who watch online nowadays when it fits their schedule. But even if you're devotedly watching online, if you're physically able to go to church, you need to go to church. I mean, there's a reason that the writer of Hebrews wrote not to neglect to gather together in chapter 10, verse 25, as some are in the habit of doing, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching. It has to do with what we were talking about in Acts 2. That's where you do life together. There's an accountability there. There's an encouragement there. There's a challenging you onward toward Christ together, to follow him more closely, to love him more, and to love people more as you see other people do it. There's discipling and discipleship that goes on when you're together with people. That's not the same as when you're watching tremendous teaching even on a flat screen. And so, please, I would encourage you, it is not a substitute for being involved in the life of a local church. Not a substitute for being involved in the life of a local church. So I agree with you there. I got to tell you, I really appreciate what you had to say today in all my heart. And so I need to thank Legacy Way again for sponsoring that. We really appreciate those guys. And the On My Heart segment might be my favorite time of the week every week. I love
it. Absolutely.
I love talking about faith. I love it when we have guys come on to talk about faith on this side. I love it when you and I talk about faith on this side, but I really love, and I hope our listeners do too. I love sometimes sharing what God is doing in my heart. And I love when you share what God's doing in your heart, what's on your heart. So thank you, Legacy Way, for giving us that opportunity to do On My Heart.
Certainly. And it's just one of, like you said, it's one of the great things about the opportunity we have to do this podcast, and not only to talk about college football, but to be able to share our faith in a way that hopefully other people are able to benefit from it as well. But even if it was just the two of us, George, I get a lot out of this every single week. I appreciate being able to have these conversations with you, and hopefully, like I said, others are able to benefit as well. And so
what people don't know, Brad, is that before we ever started this podcast, we were having, I don't know, I mean, starting about a year ago now, we've had, you know, several phone conversations that ended up probably, if we'd have known it, we were basically doing On My Heart segments.
Yeah.
Because you were sharing what God was doing in your heart, and I was sharing what God was doing in my life. And, you know, we went through a couple different things, each of us did. And
we were both in job limbo.
That's right.
During that time. And yeah.
That's right. And so we basically had to convert this into a podcast just because you and I were having enough fun, and fun's the wrong word, enough encouragement And so just hearing how another Christ follower is following Christ, regardless of situation, great days, you know, days that weren't as outwardly great, whatever. God is good. We're following him. And so I hope the listeners appreciate it. I know I do. And so thank you, Brad. And, you know, hey, I'll say one other thing. Listeners, if you don't have somebody that you can share like that with, go find them. Because it is, it's life-giving.
Absolutely. And by the way, at the end of the podcast, we always give out the contact information for the show. And if anyone doesn't have someone that they can reach out to discuss, you know, important things that are going on in their lives, if you need to talk to a fellow believer, you have nobody else, reach out to us. Either one of us would love to talk to you about anything that's going on. And we would be honored to do that.
Yeah. And I'll give the information out right now too. We'll give it out at the end of the pod too, but you can email us at gridirongospelpod@gmail.com. Anytime you want. Love to talk with you. Love to correspond with you. You can also direct message us on Twitter. He's at @JBradEdwards. And I'm at @George Schroeder. Some of you can spell Schroeder. You can find me. That's not always the easiest thing. So, but yeah, for sure.
All right. Well, let's wrap up this podcast the way we always do. And that is with our picks, where we're going to give our best effort to predict what's going to happen this coming weekend. It's a big weekend in college football. Last weekend didn't seem like it was likely to be that big, and you know, outside of one upset, it really wasn't. But I think we're going to see some clarity right after this week, because there are some very key games. They're going to decide some things in a few different conferences. So let's get started. And this week's picks are brought to you, as always, by Betterman. Betterman is calling an audible. They're giving men an easy to use playbook, a timeless strategy for how to win as a man. A free resource for small and large groups, Betterman is perfect for any gathering. Check them out at betterman.com. So, George, let's get right into it. Big one in the Big 12, especially with Texas, presumably still with a backup quarterback, hosting Kansas State, who, by the way, still hanging around. Like, I had a great season last season. We kind of forgot about them after a slow start to this year, but still a very dangerous team.
Yeah, they are. And Chris Klieman is one of the better coaches that most people haven't heard about, because you don't pay much attention to K-State. Obviously, was tremendous at North Dakota State and made the step up into not just FBS, but Power 5 or whatever we're calling it now. That said, look, even without Ewers, I think Texas is going to handle K-State at home. It's not going to be easy, but I like Texas to win here. So I'll just say Texas. Texas, 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 hook 'em.
I'm tempted, George. I really am. You want me to do it?
You're rooting for chaos in the Big 12. I see what you're doing.
Every Texas fan has got to be scared to death of this game, because Kansas State has beaten them more than their fair share of times, you know, in the last decade plus. This team has been a little bit of a thorn in their side. So
this is true, but I'm going to tell you, Sark's got them going differently. And if you were going to play that game, we could come up with a bunch of teams in the Big 12 that have done that to Texas in the previous post-Mac Brown era until Sark got them going. So, yes, but you're right. K-State has been a special thorn in their side.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm going to go with Texas. But I'm just saying, don't be surprised.
That was the old Lee Corso helmet.
The takeaway. Yep. Yeah. All right. Next game, Texas A&M at Ole Miss. And George, I'm just going to throw this one out there before you pick it. For those who are not aware, since Johnny Manziel left Texas A&M after the 2013 season, the Aggies have a losing record, actually a few games under 500 against the state of Mississippi, against Ole Miss and Mississippi State. So This is one of those teams that we talk about thorn in the side. Both of those Mississippi teams have been a lot of trouble for Texas A&M. This game is in Oxford.
Yeah, and listen, I'm not high on Texas A&M. I'm not really high on Ole Miss either. That said, Ole Miss has started to play a little bit of defense, got a better offense than Texas A&M does. And I don't think things are trending well for Texas A&M right now. Look, I'm not right. sure that Texas A&M can do enough right now to keep to prevent angry Aggies from coming for Jimbo and giving him lots of money and paying him to go away. I'm not sure that they are capable of winning their way past that at this point. But I don't think they're winning in Oxford either. So I'm going to go Ole Miss.
Yeah, I'm with you. And this is a big game for Jimbo, we would assume. I mean, for whatever degree we know anything that's going on, because they already have three losses. They are not only at Ole Miss, but at the end of the season are at LSU. So if they don't win this game, you're probably looking at 7-5 as a best case scenario for the Aggies. And that's obviously not where they expected to be. I'm with you, George. I think Ole Miss takes this one. I don't love this Ole Miss team, but I think they just do enough to win most weeks. And I expect them to, you know, to stick to that script. So now this is one of my favorite games of this weekend. And we alluded to it earlier in the podcast with Dennis Dodd. Oklahoma at Oklahoma State. Bedlam for the last time and who knows how long in Stillwater. What do you think, George? You've seen quite a few of these.
Yeah, I've seen many Bedlams through the years. Let me just say this. If Oklahoma had played well against UCF and well against Kansas and beaten Kansas, and so was 8-0 and had not shown any cracks post-Texas, post that win over Texas, and if Oklahoma State had not gotten it together over the last few weeks, chosen a quarterback, Mike Gundy, that was a big move right there, by the way, going with Alan Bowman, and figured out to give the ball to Ollie Gordon, who, by the way, we have not mentioned on this podcast, but is running wild, running for more than 200 yards in the last couple of games each, two consecutive games. If neither of those things, if both of those things had happened, if Oklahoma had continued playing well and was still 8-0, was 8-0, and if OSU, Oklahoma State, had not turned it around in Stillwater, last Bedlam, I would have been scratching my head as to what to pick. Okay? But last Bedlam in Stillwater, Oklahoma left them to go to the SEC starting next year. Doesn't sit well. Oklahoma State starting to play better. And I still think Oklahoma's a better team. Oklahoma's trending downward, or at least the last couple of weeks they have. I'm going with the Cowboys to win in Boone Pickens Stadium in the tightest confines you can find for a Power 5 stadium where the fans hanging over the stands could slap the opposing players with those paddles if they wanted to.
Yep.
And I'm going with the Cowboys and Mike Gundy to pull off the upset. I think they're going to win the final Bedlam until whenever the next one is.
George, I'm with you. And like you said, it's the current trajectory. Oklahoma State over the last, three or four games has been playing very well. Oklahoma, obviously, over the last two, not looked very good. Game is in Stillwater. And despite everything I know about the history of this rivalry, which basically screams, do not ever trust Oklahoma State in this game, I'm going to do it just like you did. We both know better, but we're both going with the Cowboys.
Yeah, so, and listen, let me say this. Highest ceiling, clearly Oklahoma. The higher of the two ceilings is clearly Oklahoma. But right now, Oklahoma's playing towards its floor, and Oklahoma State, over the last two or three or four games, has started to play closer to whatever its ceiling is. And that's the trend is not good. Now, maybe Oklahoma turns it around. I can't pick them this week.
All right, we're on the same side of the first three games. Here's game number four, Washington at USC.
All right, so you just want me to pick first every time, and that's okay. I'm happy.
Oh, you want me to go first?
No, yeah. Yeah, I think we should like rotate.
Yeah, let me go first, okay. Because you're right. Like, I always go last, and that's not necessarily fair.
I mean, when we have a guest picker, that's cool. We just go in the same order, but you and I should go back and forth.
All right, let's do that.
Overtime.
Yeah, and look, this is intriguing because neither team has looked that great certainly in the last couple of weeks, USC, three games in a row. I mean, the thing is, USC came so close to losing for the third straight week with Washington and Oregon being the next two teams up. I mean, you realize USC was nearly in a position to have a five-game losing streak. But
down 14
as it is,
left to Cal. And,
right.
Even after they came back, they still almost lost. So
yeah, I mean, USC not looking great, but Washington at USC, you know what this comes down to for me is that it shapes up to be a shootout, right? And both, you know, really good offenses capable of scoring a ton of points, and I just trust Washington's defense to get one more stop than I trust USC's defense to be able to get. And so that's what I'm coming down to. Even though, I mean, look, this is a huge game for USC. We mentioned it earlier with Dennis. They're still in the loss column, are tied with Oregon for second place in the Pac-12. So this is an enormous game for them and the chance to, you know, keep conference title hopes alive. And they're at home, but I'm going with the Huskies.
Yeah, no, listen, I completely agree with you. And, you know, I'd mentioned that USC almost lost to Cal. That's a California bunch that, you know, I think Justin Wilcox is probably going to lose his job here at the end of the year, quite probably. So, I mean, that's not one of the – we talk about how good the Pac-12 teams is. California is not one of the teams we're talking about
right.
when we talk about that. Look, it's going to be a shootout. It's going to be one of those old Baylor-West Virginia-type matchups from
yeah,
10 years ago when Art Briles was – you know, running that crazy super spread out there.
Yeah.
Geno Smith on the other side, I think.
63,
RG3, and Geno Smith, and whoever. I don't know if that's who the quarterbacks were. Or Patrick Mahomes, Baker Mayfield, 66-59.
Right, right.
Oklahoma won out there in Texas Tech, whenever year that was, 2017, 2016. It has that feel to me. I do think Washington's better. I do think Washington has a better defense. Something in me says Caleb Williams and them are going to win a shootout. I'll pick USC to win, and we should probably have to pick the score, 57-53.
Oh, I like that. I'm going to go
10 points.
Yeah. You know what? I'm going to be bold, George, and go under 100. I'm going to say 49-45. And I'm going with Washington as the winner. So,
you're probably right on both counts, but I'm just going to I'm going to give Lincoln and Caleb Williams one shot here to because I think they've got we know how talented they are. I think they've got a shot left in the gun, and I don't think it's going to happen at Oregon.
Yeah, so this is it. So all right, that gives us one game we're on opposite sides of. Let's see if we can get one more. LSU at Alabama is the last game we're going to pick, and this, for you know, by all accounts, seems to be for the SEC West. Obviously, if LSU were to win, they still have to take care of their own business the rest of the way in order to clinch that. But you know, I like their chances of doing it. So I think whoever wins this game wins the West and goes to Atlanta to take a shot at Georgia.
Yeah, look, it's a foolish game to pick against Nick Saban, and I'm picking against Nick Saban. I think LSU has started to play a little bit of defense. I know I said that about Ole Miss, but I actually think LSU really has started to play a little bit of defense, a lick. You know, they say you can't play a lick. Now they're playing a lick. Not two licks, not five licks, but a lick. I don't know what any of that means. And their offense is high octane. And,
yep.
I just think Jaden Daniels is terrific. We're not talking about him enough. But if it becomes a track meet, Alabama's not keeping up. Now, the one thing I would say is I'm not sure LSU's played anybody like Alabama that can maybe keep it from being a track meet. Alabama's defense is legit.
Yeah.
But I think it's going to be hard for for Alabama to outscore LSU. So I'm going to go in Tuscaloosa with LSU.
And I'm going with you, George.
We're both going to be wrong.
Yep. Of course.
That's how
we
feel.
But I just don't have any confidence that this Alabama team can win a high-scoring game. And I think LSU is going to score. I think Alabama is going to need at least 35 to win. And like you said, that's probably where Alabama goes out and forces four turnovers and LSU scores 20 and, you know, they win 28-20 or something like that. But I think they're going to have to score 35. I think they're going to need to turn over LSU several times in order to be able to win this, because, you know, we all know Daniels is capable of running for a lot of yards. And as well as Alabama's defense has played this season, that's one thing that they have not done well is defend quarterback run. And, it's kind of an Achilles heel for that defense. And I don't like their chances of slowing LSU down. And even in Tuscaloosa, like I see it being a similar game to the Alabama Texas game where they just, you know, they score some points, but they give up too many. And, LSU ends up being, this team goes onto that short list of teams to beat Nick Saban in consecutive seasons. And I believe since he's been at Alabama, it's only happened two times. One of them was LSU, 2010, 2011. The other one was Ole Miss, 2014 and 15, I believe. But I think LSU adds to that list. And so, George, we are on the same side of everything except for Washington at USC, even though we both have picked at least one upset. I'm not sure if we picked more than one, but we'll see. We'll see how we do. But that is it for our picks for this week. And thank you again to Betterman for sponsoring our pick segment each and every week.
That's right. And we have to wrap this thing up too. So thanks to Legacy Way for sponsoring the On My Heart segment, excuse me. And thanks as always and especially to our presenting sponsor, Subsplash, which is so much more than just a church software. It brings people together, empowers giving, fosters discipleship, and transforms lives. And we have had guests on this show who say, hey, my church uses Subsplash, and it's kind of cool to hear. But book a demo today at subsplash.com/SBC, special discount for churches there, but you do have to use the link. So let me remind people, by the way, to subscribe. You can visit us online at gridironandthegospel.com. First of all, you can find us on Twitter or Instagram @gridiron_gospel. You can email us, and I mentioned this earlier, please email us, gridirongospelpod@gmail.com, gridirongospelpod@gmail.com. But if you'd rate, review, and subscribe in your favorite podcast app, we'd really appreciate that. Search for Gridiron and the Gospel, or follow the links on the show website, which, of course, is gridirongospel.com. If you tune in next week for more, we'll be back with a whole lot more of Gridiron and the Gospel, a faith and college football podcast, which is a BP Sports production.